My guest at this time is Pamela Geller, president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative and publisher of Atlas Shrugs. She is a prominent author, columnist, and voice on the threat posed by radical Islam. Today, we want to get her insights on the large number of people from Western nations apparently motivated to join radical groups like the Islamic State, how big of a threat this is to Western nations, and how this trend can be effectively confronted. And Pamela, thanks very much for your time today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Many different sources now believe there are at least hundreds of Americans or more and thousands of Europeans who have joined the Islamic State out of sympathy for their mission or their ideology. How accurate do you think those numbers are, and what's attracting these people to groups like ISIS?
Well, I think the numbers are probably low because they haven't taken the threat terribly seriously for the past 10 years. They've been discounting and completely avoiding or omitting the motive. It's not surprising at all that Muslims in the West would express support for the Islamic State. The idea of a caliphate transcends national allegiance and goes beyond anything current. It goes back to the beginning of Islamic history. Western analysts, of course, are surprised by this because they have discounted the Islamic theology as a motivating factor for jihadists, and they don't understand the implications of the jihadis' attachment to Islam. It's a religious imperative.
Pamela, I guess the conventional wisdom is that Islamic families, Muslim families, come to Western nations because they're looking for a greater modicum of freedom and so forth. Do we have a wrong assumption on why they move to Western nations?
Well, I'm sure many Muslims move to Western nations to escape the Sharia. Not every Muslim is a devout Muslim. Not every Muslim, you know, wants to become operational or is a jihadist. But the fact is many Muslims, as we see in Europe, as we see in China, as we see in Burma, as we see in Nigeria, and we see in America, like in, with, you know, Muslim Brotherhood groups like CARE and the Islamic Society of North America, many Muslims come to the West with a ready-made model of society, of government, that they believe is superior to what is currently in place. And this, of course, is where they differ from most immigrant populations in the past. Immigrant populations, whether it's from Eastern Europe, whether it's from Asia, they would come to America for freedom. That was the idea of, you know, the shining light on the hill is it's freedom. It's individual rights. This is the uniqueness of America. This is what makes American exceptionalism exceptional. It's individual exceptionalism. So, yes, of course, many have come to this country for that idea, but many come, as I said, with a ready-made model of society that they believe is superior to man-made law.
You mentioned the immigration factor, of course, and one of the things that folks have noticed in the immigration debate in general, but certainly as it pertains to perhaps Muslim communities more than others, is the lack of assimilation. How big of a problem is that, and how does that factor into some of this radicalism?
Well, it's a very big problem in countries where, again, it's contingent upon the Muslim population. The Muslim population, for example, in France is over 10%. And you see outside of Paris, which is still a bit of a jewel, it can be very frightening. The no-go zones, the Sharia zones where firefighters and police cannot go. They are many times lured by particular criminal activity into these zones only to be ambushed. We see it in the UK, increasingly the imposition of Sharia law. And people think it can't happen here, but it is happening here. Myself, my colleagues are silenced. We are blackballed. We are blacklisted. We are marginalized. We are demonized. You see even this week a Vermont store that had a sign to bacon, took it down because it offended a Muslim. We see the masking of the workplace, imposing Muslim prayer times on non-Muslim workers in large companies like Heinz and Hertz, the Target and Walmart, Muslim cashiers will not handle meat that's not halal. Disney, Muslim workers want to wear the hijab. And when Disney offered to incorporate the hijab, the Islamic garb, into a costume, they refused to wear it. So this is how it starts off with demands and then accommodation and then more demands and so on and so on. We are, I would say, stage two. Europe is stage three. You look at somewhere like Sudan, that's stage five of the Islamization of a particular country. It's drip, 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 drip. That's how it's happening, and it is happening. One only has to read my book that I wrote 3 years ago called Stop the Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to the Resistance. As you can see, the Islamization of the workplace, of the public school, of the public square, of the national dialogue, where literally the media is self-enforcing the Sharia. They will not criticize Islam. They will not offend Islam. Only earlier today I was on Newsmax television debating a leftist columnist, and she insisted that the real threat to America was the climate and infrastructure. You are more likely to get hit by a bridge falling down than by a terrorist. I mean, this takes a certain kind of crazy.
Pamela, real briefly, what's the best way to start confronting this, the most effective way?
The most effective way is to start confronting the biggest weapon that the media has, that the enemy has in their arsenal, and that is the media, the enemy media. And I salute you for having me on the show to even discuss it, and many other hosts on Talk Radio do address it. The key is educating the public. This is, this is the number one. First, they must learn everything. First, they must understand who and what they're up against. And they don't, because it's like, they're Helen Keller and someone moved the furniture. Every human being in this country has a sphere of influence. Facebook, Twitter, email, coffee clutch, water cooler, tennis games, whatever it is people do, you've got to talk, you've got to teach, and you're going to meet a lot of resistance because the enemy media is a very powerful and large machine. But we cannot defeat an enemy that not only do we not understand, but we dare not say its name. This is what we have to do first, and then we can just strategize how you can defeat jihad.
Last topic before we let you go. You mentioned, in your opinion, the need to talk about it openly. Just last week, you had the president in his statement, as well as one of the State Department spokeswomen last week, saying that ISIL, ISIS, Islamic State, however you want to call it, does not speak for Islam, and they speak for no religion. What did you make of that characterization from the government?
Well, I thought it was typical of Obama. He's woefully unprepared to face the threat of the Islamic State. He can't even say it. He said it has nothing to do with religion. Their name is the Islamic State. I mean, as I said, this is crazy. I don't know if he's clueless. I don't believe he's clueless. I believe he's complicit because we have seen him align with the Jihad force in Egypt, Muslim Brotherhood, in Libya with Al-Qaeda-linked groups, in Gaza with Hamas. Hamas is ISIS in Gaza. He created the threat of the Islamic State by leaving Iraq precipitously and giving an opportunity to this group. He has denied it has anything to do with Islam, despite its name. He has denied that the Foley killing has anything to do with the U.S., despite the fact that the Islamic State has made explicit threats to the U.S., that Foley was beaten more than any of the other hostages because he was American, that Foley was literally hung, crucified on a wall because his brother was a member of the U.S. Army. And so this shows that Obama is encased in denial and willful ignorance, and he's not. And this is not a recipe for success or a sign that he's prepared to deal with the threat.
Pamela, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you for your time today very much.
Thank you for having me.
Pamela Geller is president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative and publisher of Atlas Shrugged. She's a prominent author, columnist, and voice on the threat posed by radical Islam. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.